My name is Kenya Price.
I am a survivor of the Khmer Rouge War. When I was a child, the Khmer Rouge invaded Cambodia. My village and my family was forced into the labor camp.
Destitute and clinging to life, Kenya entered a refugee camp in Thailand.
I would sneak out at night and fight in local Muay Thai fight. Any money I earned was used to buy food for my family.
In America, left with limited language and job skills, Kenya would rely on his fighting skills again and pass on Bokator and the ancient Khun Khmer arts to a new generation. His martial arts skills have become a platform to fight crimes against humanity, stop human trafficking, and bring positive change to individuals in the world. Wanting to give a voice to those that were silenced by the Khmer Rouge, Kenya published his life story in a book, Blackstone Hands.
I explained to you early, you know.
Yeah.
You need only one kid. If I can't train one kid to become something, that's a plus right there. That kid can mold something out to become something out. But we have to give them the right tool. Mm-hmm. And doesn't matter what kind of sport it is, teaching people, teaching kids, like I mentioned again, it's really, really, really important. Do not just bring the kid to any gym. Do not bring the kid into any place that they want to play the sport. Long term, they will got hurt.
Yeah,
and they damage themselves. They cannot do anything for a long time. So it's real important. And I'm just encourage parents, look through it, and don't be stingy. That, you know what, that school is so expensive. If that school can relate something for the kid's future, put it. Money is nothing. Put it, but that school can cost your kid downside. Even a penny, don't spend it.
Yeah, that's true. Even free, right? Free, yeah, exactly.
It makes sense because This is the life that your parents trust the teacher, trust the school that want them to put them to become something. If you want just your kid become a discipline, respect, go to the discipline, respect. I think that's better. Then you learn something, a wrong thing, wrong skill, wrong move. Teach them how to respect. Just respect. Go there, respect people, say hello, pray, be all good and think, right? And then teach them a martial art. That's much better. You know,
true.
It's not like all martial art respect, but you teach them the wrong thing.
All right. Hey, what's up, everybody? My name is Coach Handeka. Welcome to another episode of C4 Podcast. I'm here with my co-host, John Messina. If you haven't already, please like, share, comment, tell your friends, family about our podcast that talks about Asian, Southeast Asian athletes and their adversity. We have an amazing guest on here today. He's a martial artist and when I say artist, he truly is an artist in the purest sense of the word. Sometimes you think martial arts and you just think fighting and physical, right? But art, people tend to forget about that word, and like the best martial artists in the world I truly see it as an art and as something that they teach and they love, versus just picking up a fist and fighting and kicking and all that stuff. So without further ado, let me send it over to my co-host, John, and he will introduce our guests.
Yeah. So today we have Kenya Pratch. He born in Cambodia. And when this interview airs, as for those of you who've been following the show and the Lao American Sports Hall of Fame, I will be actually on a flight when we publish this to Cambodia for the 2023 SEA Games. As most of you know, my daughter will be competing. First, wanted to thank
the community and everybody who came out to support our GoFundMe campaign, that we've hit 80% of our goal as of the time of recording this, hopefully probably 100% as of the time we release this, to fund the 5 athletes that were sent in from the United States in swimming and wrestling. We're also, thanks to everybody's support, able to bring some high quality gear, caps, swim caps, team shirts, and so forth for the athletes and coaches on the swim team and wrestling teams for Laos. So greatly appreciate that. I almost had the opportunity to see Kenya there at the SEA Games. He had a chance to go in more of a consultative type role, not fighting per se this time, but due to a lot of cool things that he has going on in his life that he's going to tell us about today, he wasn't able to go. Kenya has a new book out, Blackstone Hands. I have just ordered my copy. It should be here any day. I'm very excited to read it. He'll be talking about that book a little bit more. But Kenya, before we get to the book, The Ancient Art of Bokator, I hope I'm pronouncing it correct, Cambodian martial art. Why don't you start by first telling us what it is and then how you got into that particular martial art?
First of all, just want to say thank Cole and John that bring me up here. I really appreciate it. And, you know, I'm one of, you know, big supporters, especially with the sport, with the Asian sport like this. And then, I mean, we have to get together, but I really appreciate that you bring me up here. And my name's Kenya Praj. I was born and raised in Cambodia. What I mean that not raised, you know, I raised traveling from country to another country and up to United States, yes. And my background is, you know, I'm a kid that have no clue about sport, basically. I'm educated, you know, I liked school when I was young. But let me tell you about, long story short, about those things. Why I into the sport. And, you know, everyone, when you're young, at that time, and back in the 60s, 70s, everyone inspired with a Chinese movie, like Bruce Lee's, you know, Kung Fu movie, we all, you know, like that, right? So that's why, you know, that's why I, you know, got into those kind of sport like that. And at the same time, I have no clue about my root as the, you know, Cambodian martial art, what they call Bokator. I have no clue, the same thing, because you're so young, and in the old day, all the instructors, master, I don't know, different country, but my country is completely different way, not to broadcast, not to show, not to let you know what it is. And they just like, you know, real conservative. They just want to, you had to prove a lot of things to get accept to learning something like that. Yeah. Any questions about?
Yeah, so how does it differ from Muay Thai and some of the martial arts that a lot of our listeners may have heard of, Bokator?
Okay, Bokator is the old ancient in the old, you know, it. What I said is more like a combat fighter. In the old, during the king, you know, the dynasty, like thousand or whatever years ago. And coincidence, when I was young, I, you know, and I live in some part of a city, but again, when you were young and you kind of like become a, it's not mature and you like to challenge. And that's why I have a chance to learn Bokator, because my parents saw me that, you know, hey, I somehow got into some fight when I was young, stuff like that. I like to challenge like that. So that's why I have a chance to learn Bokuto. Bokuto is an old martial art again. When I learned Bokuto, Bokuto is it's not much fighting. It's more like a show. Like a show technique, you know, and when you come down with knife, weapon, stuff like that, it's killing. So you don't have the time, you don't have a chance to prove, because all killing is all hurting badly. So you don't, so all you need to learn is just to show, basically to show. Bokuto is just one technique in the Khmer martial art. They call Kambuyan. When I say, let me say that this one in Khmer, Kun Khmer Buran, you know, like everyone heard it, okay, Kun Khmer Buran. So one, Bokuto is one of them in India, pretty much in there. But like Bokuto, it means, like when you translate in, breaking down to Cambodian, box.
Okay.
Tao, I mean box, lion.
Box, like boxing? You mean boxing?
Like yeah, like a box. Yeah.
Okay.
Like, you know, you box, and Tao mean like a lion.
Okay.
You fight with animal, pretty much. You fight animal.
Yeah.
They use that technique, you know, to fight with animal. They fight with defend on something like that. Yeah, that's how I start. But like I said, when you're young, you have no clue what it means, you know. But I learned I learned the main course of the book, the Khmer martial art. They call yes.
Okay.
Well, you were there, you'll have in your childhood, there was obviously a war going on in Cambodia at that time. And then at some point during your childhood, the Khmer Rouge actually took over and you were there during it. So maybe tell us kind of how old you were during that time and whatever you're comfortable telling us about relative to the big change and the atrocities basically that you had to see.
You know, everyone heard about the killing here, Cambodian, the Khmer Rouge, and I'm sure Laos, Thai, they, you know, Thai, they have no war, and they have not much clues about about the war. Cambodian or Laos, you know, or Vietnam, they do know, but they didn't even went through that, right?
Yeah. So
first of all, I just want to thank God for save my life, and you know, thanks the men up there that gave me another chance to come here, especially meet you, John, and Cole, to speak up for the rest of the people, the innocent people that got killed during that 4 years. To survive the Khmer Rouge is it. When I say something surviving or tortures, I mean just the word itself, I mean not many people understand, got the feeling of that. But you have to put it this way. 1975 population was only 5 million people, Cambodian population.
Uh-huh.
So 3 million is murder.
Wow.
And not just that, the one that alive, the murder is torture, work 10 to 12 hours a day without food, you know. So those torture, again, I don't know how I make it here.
Yeah.
And that's what I, you know, I thank God for, you know, give me the opportunity and to come here to live in spy and to live to have the voice of the 3 million people, include my sister and brother, include my whole uncle, you know, four or five uncle family.
Wow.
So I'm so blessed that I hope they're happy to see, you know, what I'm speaking of today. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Wow. Sure, I'm sure they are. And how old were you around this time?
You know, 15.
15, okay.
When I start when the war start, I'm 15, so I'm pretty much an adult, like a young adult.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just a perfect target that Khmer Rouge most likely killed a lot of people like that. Yeah.
Yeah, wow. Well, we're glad that you made it out. I know it's very challenging time. And then, so you eventually made it into a refugee camp in Thailand, correct?
Yes, yeah. I am. You know, as you know, a long story short, in refugee camp, you know that it's not a happy place, the same thing. And I, you know, my second book will coming soon, include with Laos, because I don't want to say anything too much about that, but most likely... Yeah. In Thailand, I meet a lot of, I make a lot of friends from Laos.
Okay. And
they escaped, you know, they told me the story, swim at night. If the red Laos saw you swim, they shoot you to kill. And the Thai shoulder saw you, they kill you too. The same thing. You know, that's what they told me all the time. And then when they come to Thailand and Thai people doesn't like Laos to be in, you know, so the story that we hide both the same thing inside of Thailand. So
yeah.
That my second book will come in.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we'll dive into that in the second book. But one thing you did do there was, you know, you pretty much lived on the edge there. So you started fighting, from what I understand, while you were in Thailand, right?
Yes. I just make a shortcut. I want people to read my book.
Yeah, absolutely. Just this is the good part. So,
you know, I fought a little bit when I was young. They call Salmani fighting, open Salmani for any pro fighter in Cambodian when I was a young age also. So when I came to refugee camp in Thailand, they lock you up. You know, that you're not allowed to out from perimeter in Thailand, pretty much they shoot you to kill if you're in and out the Thailand refugee camp. So yeah, that's what, and to make a living, to support my family. And luckily that I ran into a Khmer Seren. I don't know if you understand that Khmer Seren is a Cambodian Thai. You know,
from certain area of Thailand, they speak Khmer there. Yeah.
Yeah. They speak Thai, you know, Khmer Seren. So yep. Those family adopt me to, you know, to put me into the fight. So I make money from a little thing it's not a big fight. It's just celebration, bars and those kind of stuff like that in Thailand. Yeah. That's what I made a lot of Laos.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And then you had to fight your way there. So that's kind of how you got your real, I would say, competitive fighting foundation was developed there at that time, your first real competition?
It kind of real. Yes, kind of yes and no, because in the outside of, in Thailand back in 1980, they don't have a proper judge. They don't have proper.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just like, you know, they put you, hey.
You guys go.
The same talk.
Would you fight till knockout or till somebody quits? How are the fights?
Yeah. Until you quit. You have a decision too, but the point, a lot of in the bar, they want to see knockout. So that way.
Yeah.
That way they
Yeah.
Well, so the real juicy details are in the book, obviously, of that, and we'll certainly be looking forward to reading about that. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Could you tell us when you went to the refugee camp in Thailand? Who who were, like, in regards to your family, who were you with? Like, were you, you were with your parents, you were with your other siblings? Who was there with you in the camps?
Luckily that I, brought my family with me. But of course, you know, it, during the Khmer Rouge, I lost, you know, a couple there.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Again, in my book, right? But I managed to relay the information and brought them over to a refugee camp. But, you know, along the way is so still brutal. It you imagine that you survived the 4 year and you come across the borders, the main line, the explosion around that borders, and also Thai restrict the border. You cannot across it. So you, it's so many obstacles.
I just read, so we have a guest, Leth Own. I don't know if you know him. He's a Secret Service agent, Khmer American.
Oh yeah, that's my brother.
Is he? Yeah, you know him then. Yeah, so he's going to be coming on after I get back from Cambodia. And I just finished his book. And the thing that was eye-opening for me is we think, okay, 1979, the Khmer Rouge was done. But he talks about the period after was anarchy with, you know, war here. Everybody's now homeless, you know, no medical facility, nothing, you know, it's no government, nothing. And so it's not like they just got overthrown and everything was fine. There was then anarchy, and then you try to get out, but then they put all the bombs, the landmines. You might run into some soldiers still fighting and very challenging time to even get to the camp, you know, just to get there is a big deal. So, yeah.
It is, again, I don't know any country, but my people been through so much.
Yeah.
And I just, I don't know how I make it here.
Yep.
Be honest with you. That's why it's important for me to speak out. You know, I'm thank you for inviting me again, John and Cole. This is important information, you know, to, you know, let the people know that don't forget about the 3 million people, not just like, you know, in Jewish during the Holocaust, they put them, you know, in chambers and stuff like that. But my people is a brutal killer. They undescribable kill.
Yeah,
it's no joke. It's everything in my book. The Killing Field movie. You think the Killing Field movie, it brutal enough to see, read my book.
Yeah,
and know exactly what it is.
First-hand account. Yeah, man.
We're definitely glad you came on to tell the story. It's a story that needs to be told, because you just didn't hear much about it. I think it was, you know, right after the Vietnam War, and all the attention was on like Vietnam and the U.S. right? But then like countries like Laos, Cambodia, like Laos just got hit with bombs, and it wasn't even our war, you know. They were just dropping bombs on us. So,
yeah.
You know, and yeah, like you said, the Thais are pretty lucky. They didn't have to deal with war, and they get known for their good food and you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, thank you so much for coming on and sharing as much as you can. And we will definitely, you know, read the book to find out more.
Yeah. So then eventually you got sponsored and came to the U.S., right? Tell us about that journey and what was it like adapting? What were your, you know, early years in the U.S.?
Long story short, you know, I'm 15 when the Khmer, back in, you know, you had to think about it, 1960, in Asia, yeah. In general, in all Asia, in Asia, we have no technology.
Mm.
Everyone still stay in a candle or the, you know, light, you know, electricity. We some people not even hardly see the car. the truth, right? Yep. Never write one time in the car. Never, right? And basically, my people is in a farm, cows, horse, buffalo. That's what they raise, right? So I'm a 15. I have no technology. Came to escape. After that, run after the same refugee camp, nothing. It's just people, a bunch of people together, locked up in the like jail cell, the same thing. So when you came to United States, think about it, the third world, it's like a heaven.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like you take a wild animal, let them loose in the big city. What are you gonna do? It's the same thing. That's me. It's not that I enjoy it, because you're still in surviving mode all the time. Since you were young, and you came to United States, you see the culture is culture shock. It completely different. It's like opposite. Like I said, it's like ground and heaven. It's just the same like that. So I have so many embarrassed story to tell you in my book.
tell
us one. Tell us one that you can share today. Tell us a story.
I just say like, okay, for example, if I used to eat any kind of insects, when I took the restaurant, I said, oh, I eat this one then, and you imagine how American people look at you.
Yeah.
But in 78, right? So you kind of look at that. And then also, I am just, you know, back in 80, I went to come to Chicago, and not too many Asian there. I live in Southside. It's not too many Asian. No. It's only black, African American, and whites, and they just look you like, you know, and plus the way you act is weird. You're not into, you know, the culture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you came in 1980, huh? 1980, and you landed in Chicago.
Actually, I came 1982. I was supposed to come in 1981, but out the paperwork. It's a long story short. It's a medical, you know, they want to make sure that you are clean.
So you landed in Chicago. So how did you get into martial arts and fighting here in the U.S.?
Back then, you know, when you're young, you came to the United States. You have no education. You don't speak the language.
Mm-hmm.
Or no one. No one supports you. Even the general, I apply for general, they don't not even hire me. They straight forward here, you don't know how to clean. They told me straight forward like that. Yeah. And then so what else can I do? So that's why it, you know, the only thing I said about, you know what, since I walk around kick on the street for nothing, why don't I teach the martial art that I know for free? So that's my, you know, my philosophy of life, that, you know, I just want to bring on, because of I learned Bukutor, my Cambodian martial art, and I fought in Thailand, and I know how the Thai fighting. Of course, you know, I'm not going to tell you a lot about fighting. I got beat up. Because, you know, you not in the high level, you go compete high level. So you understand. Although, so I recreate my own way to, you know, to learn how to protect myself. That's why. So a long story short, I got accepted somehow. I don't know how lucky I got accepted to school. So I represent school. In Indiana, that's what I box, because that time they don't have kickboxing. by an AD, no, they don't have kickboxing, no. It's hardly kickboxing is different word in French and stuff like that. They do have it. They have karate tournament, but they have kind of like a rule, you know, you don't have, you can do this, you cannot do that, you know, something like that. But the kickboxing, Muay Thai, you know, fight Thailand and in Asia, kickboxing is completely different. So you cut your elbow, your knee, so they don't not allow that. So I said, wow, what the use of fight like that, you know?
So you went to a martial arts school in Indiana?
Boxing school, you said?
No. I went to school for trade school.
Trade.
Okay.
Yeah, I went for trade school because, you know, you came here, a lot of story. People said, oh, I came here. I'm 18, 19 in a refugee camp. I came here to United States and I went to high school. Wait a minute. You're 19 in a refugee camp, you're 18 in a refugee camp, and you come here, you enter this high school. When you pass 19, you graduate, right? In high school, right? Yeah. So they said, does it make sense to you? Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's the part. So I just applied to trade school that I accepted to Indiana. And in the bird, Indiana is, again, no Asian.
Where in Indiana? What town?
In the bird, Indiana. It's a suburb in the bird, Indiana. It is no Asian.
Okay.
Again, they don't have any sport except boxing, tracking, volleyball, and all those kinds of, you know, American sport right here, right? Right. Mm-hmm. Basketball and stuff like that. So I joined boxing. I know nothing about boxing, American boxing. But when I watched them spar, I went to spar, and it's not hard for me. And my condition when I was young is completely different. I hardly got tired. This is me, because I trained so hard since I was young until to United States, and then my condition is like I never feel pain. I never feel pain. That's that's me. So when I joined boxing and everyone hit me and then we just solid like that, and we want just like.
So did you become a hit with everybody? Was everyone like, wow, this guy, he doesn't feel pain, he has great conditioning? Did you just right away just kind of like stand out?
Yep, I just stand out. I jump into fight, and then sparring, I hurt everyone.
Yeah.
And then local competitions, I knock everyone out.
Yeah.
And then they finally just represent the school.
Oh, and then
back in 1984, 83, I won a state gold medal of the whole state for they call it White River State Game. So I'm the only one.
What was it called again?
White River State Game.
Wild River State Games? White River State Games.
In my book, yeah. It's everything in my book, yeah. Yeah, so that's what I and then make long story short, the school wanted to put me 1984 for Olympic, to represent Olympic, and I have 3 years, 2 years short for American citizens. The attorney said, "Oh, don't worry. We make you in. You know, we make you through it. Don't worry about it. We make you in."
So, 1984, they wanted you to be the representative of the U.S. in the Olympics.
Yeah, with Holyfield, Mark Brilliant, and things like that. Yeah, I met them with the team, and Yeah, I said I'm so exciting. But again, I have no clue about what Olympic is all about too. By the time, you know, I just want to fight. You know.
Yeah.
So when my school, I graduated, and they said, well, you know what, you're not gonna make it Kenya because you're United States citizens not approved. You know, you have to for 5 years.
Yeah.
So that's why I was so disappointed. I said, then they said, well, you can make it turn pro when you want. So after I graduated, I just dropped everything off, and then I walked, and then I went back to Chicago. Yeah.
Okay.
So you didn't want to pursue a pro career? Is that what you're like?
You know, when you, again, you have no mentor.
Yeah.
You kind of a blind in the room, in the blind, and nobody tells you, hey, Kenya, this is good for you. This is the bad. This is, you know, this is United States like this. It's like you just on the street by yourself. You just try to, you know, as long as you got a job, have money, I don't care what it is. That's it. That's my goal. Yeah. Just I have food to eat.
Yeah.
Going back to your thing about surviving, yeah, you survive, you know, you're surviving.
Yes, yeah.
Well, so you didn't just give up martial, well, you were boxing at the time, but at some point, did you get back into martial arts, and tell us about that after you got, you know, kind of out of that boxing at the time?
With a, you know, after boxing, after graduate, and then I tried to get a job, still no one wanna hire me. And at the same time, I never forget what my passion is all about, how to fight for human rights and human trafficking. At my level, as a, you know, Asian, have no education here in the United States, who gonna listen to me? Right? I try to tell them, I have no ability to explain to them what's going on, what I want to do, and stuff like that. So I just have that idea in me, just said, you know what? I have the skill of Asian martial art. Why don't I create that and go through with that to bring people in to do what my goal is want to be, like fight human trafficking, right? So that's why I start to teach people in the park, in the garage, and all kinds of stuff like that, just for free. And then I tell the story. I told them the story about what I seen, why they should do like that. That's my story, yes.
So you're using your gift of being a great fighter to tell your true path, to tell your true story, right?
Yes, yeah. Yes.
Wow.
And yes, go ahead.
I mean, I can relate to that in a sense. I mean, I grew up a bodybuilder, but all I wanted to be was champion, 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 right? And now today I'm retired and I'm older, and my mission is different. It's not competing anymore. But if I had to tell my story of competing to get people, you know, to listen, then I want to tell my real, you know, real story about what my passion is. So I definitely have a lot of respect for that. That's,
you know, we all come here. I mean, this country is not my country. I appreciate United States that brought me here. You know, I really appreciate it. And, again, I'm not come here to take advantage of the system. I came here to build a good community. That's why everywhere I went, every state, every community, they know who I am. And I have blessed that all my students follow my footsteps. And because they see the true color of me, and they see the true what I represent for. I don't want anything from them, especially. I'm not just talk good about myself. You can you can ask anybody that know me or anybody that read my story from day one to up to date.
We can tell in just the 15 minutes that we've been talking how genuine of a person you are. So we don't question. We don't question that at all.
So. Thank you. I just, if you in that situation during the killing and you see the eye of the people look, ask me for help, then you know why I do this.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope my book, my word today, some sort of satisfy for the people that got killed. They look it down to me, and then I have, you know, I did something for them. And especially my brother, my sister, my friends, and please read the book. This book is not about making money, is not about make me famous. No.
Yeah.
It's about human beings.
Yeah.
What we're gonna do to have community and how can we prevent that killing and how we prevent that innocent kid that have no clue that lost their life for nothing. That I'm not talking about million. I talk about more than that.
Yeah.
Through the world, for example, right now it's still going on. That's why I told people, said, in the end of the day, doesn't matter how rich, poor you are, do something with human rights. The war will knock on your door soon enough. You don't believe me. The same my country, just one day, boom, knock on your door like that. And you have no choice, you have no rights. They take away all your rights, regardless what, that's it. So we are the voice, we are the power. You know, Americans, that's what I'm glad that American allowed me to come to the United States, that I have a voice to stand, especially sport. You know, I told kids throughout the world, throughout my teaching career, 34, 35 years teaching, look clearly, especially kids. If you need help, ask professional help, like you're a bodybuilder, right? Mm-hmm. You don't want to turn to a guy just to go to regular gym to ask him.
Right.
Or you don't want to go to, I don't want to say this one, it's just like money making.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? Especially kid, it's real important to teach kid. Believe me, doesn't matter what kind of sport it is, I just give advice for the kid out there, the parent out there. Before you put your kid to any sport, look clearly that he's legit. Did he know what he's doing? Did he know how to work with the kid? Because kid is really important. That absorb thing is just, and when it go in, it's hard to squeeze out. You squeeze it out, there's still something in there.
Yeah.
So,
And I just like, that's what, when I teach martial art, this is my thing, okay, when I teach martial art. I told him, said, you pay me to teach your kid, you pay me to teach you. If something I taught you to hurt yourself, you have to walk away from my gym. Because I don't want to teach you the wrong thing and to hurt your joint, you know, continue hurting, right? And you trust me, you pay me, you trust me to do good thing for your life. And I give you all the crappy thing that I don't know and learn on the internet and try to teach you.
Unfortunately, there's a lot of that on the internet and on social media, and people pretending to be teachers, right? Pretending to be coaches, you know, anybody, everybody now, as long as you can make an Instagram or Facebook page and you're a coach. And what, you know, to me, it's like, what have you accomplished? You know, what have you done? And so, yeah, but yeah. It's different nowadays. Very different.
Especially martial art. You kick the same time for 1,000 kick. You kick the wrong kick. What is your joint gonna be? You move the wrong thing. What kind of like swim? You not just go to and swim, right? You have to ask the pro a correct way how to exercise before you go to swim.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Yep.
So that way your joint, everything, it go naturally with your body to go. That's what people said. Kenya, you train since you baby two until now. I never see you got hurt. Why? Because I listen to my body.
Yeah.
Train people the right way. I told people the right way. Listen to your body. Don't lie to yourself. Honor to yourself. The most important, honor to yourself. Don't cut corner. No, honor to yourself. You cannot breathe. You lack of oxygen. Straightforward said, you know, I'm not the best. I need to learn this. I'm not fast. I need to learn this. It's just honest to yourself. So that way the coach have ability to teach you, to correct you the right way. Because a lot of martial art, I saw it as a lot of my students, the same thing. When they come in, they shy, they don't want to look embarrassed because they have a background in martial art for many years from outside. When they come, they're afraid to me to you know, to tell me the truth, what their weak point is. I told them, said straightforward, said, you come here to learn. I come here, I'm here for you to correct you the best I can for you. I don't want to teach you the wrong thing. When you go up to the ring, you become a bag, punching bag. That's one thing. Second, it's liability. It's your life. It's your, I don't want you to get hurt. Some people got killed in the ring. So I don't want to see that, you know? So I want to give you everything. Don't think that I'm high something. No, I'm not. I'm going to give you everything. That's my philosophy of teaching. Yeah.
And I love that. I mean, that's like when I introduced you in the beginning and we're talking about martial arts and the arts, because you see it as an art, you having a balanced approach. You're seeing, you know, seeing discipline, you're seeing health, right? But when the sport becomes a sport, and when it becomes a business, and the prize money is fame, and the prize is rich, and then people do whatever and they don't listen to their body, right? I'm in pain. Well, I can't stop. And unfortunately, that's what happened in my career, because I was going after the fame and I was going after the championship, and I was hurt. And this is in my documentary, but I'll share it. I mean, I got hurt, but I didn't stop. I didn't listen to it. I ignored my body, and it led me down a very difficult path. So for you to, you know, say, you know, yeah, the way you teach is how I would have loved to have been teached when I was young. You know? But yeah, very few teachers or coaches like that, though, unfortunately, right?
You have to be quick. You have to be quick. You have to be understand of individual student.
Mm-hmm.
We grow up different size, shape, you know, angles and all that kind of thing. You have to be aware of what's going on, who to teach, what to teach, and things like that, how to make that the same thing, you know. That's why I'm really specialized on correcting temper, technique, and all those things. And then at the same time, I don't know what, you know, when someone asks me this kind of question, how I bring teaching along with fighting human rights, it touched me a lot, because I love to see people happy. Because since I was young, I grew up, I see all killing. Mm. Suffer, killing, selling people. I don't know, it just, you know, I'm poor. I don't recommend anybody go to say my footstep right now, you know, because I care so much, too much. I forgot about my family. I forgot about my life. I forgot about to get rich. All I care is about happy. So which is not good because, why? Because that's my surviving mode. And so that's why I seen it in my eyes. So this life, I sacrifice that my life, this life for the people. It's okay. It's okay for me. So that's why I said, you know, if my book success, you're gonna see more from my book to the rest of the people. And this book is not like, again, you have to read it and then what I done for community and why I put this book down for the people to read it, because I want people to know who I am, and I want to know what people, they lost their life and what the future gonna be. And I just want people to be aware of what's going on, especially, you know, it's a blessed to meet people like you, you know, Cole, John, and lovely family, friend, you know, of course, people use me year and year. They use me. It's okay. It's okay. I do that. You know, I volunteer so many organizations. I volunteer. This is when I step in, nothing moved forward. So I had to step back and do my own thing again. So that's why when you coming to this kind of helping people, I always be aware of what's going on. I always say, okay, your nonprofit, this, how far you go, how many years you did. That's me, I'm look like that. If your nonprofit stay here, nothing going forward, you know, I will recommend them something to do. Hey, you should do this to make it more, reach to people more. That's me. That's why I independent. I do everything by myself. I reach out to the government, United States presidents, respond to me, everything by myself. No one.
I saw the picture of you and Jimmy Carter on your Facebook page. Have you met other presidents?
I met slightly, like a quick, but Secretary of State and a lot of local government governors and stuff like that. And again, they respond and they wrote me a good recommendation letters and appreciate what I done for community throughout the United States by my own. Yeah. I spent a lot of time, a lot of my own money to raise awareness for human trafficking and human rights. And you know, I do my best. Put it this way.
Wow. Yeah, I'm excited to hear all about that in the book for sure. How did you come up with the name Blackstone Hands for the book? Is there something behind that?
I want people to read that book.
Oh, and it's in there. The secret's in there. Okay.
Okay. Can you tell us this? The picture of the book, is that you? As a old picture of you?
Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's that. You know, a lot of people said, "Oh, you know, hey, you look like a bodybuilder." I said, "I went to gym, but I'm not a heavy lifter. The most is 30 pounds. and pretty much, but I do a lot of, you know, pull up and push up by myself and stuff like that. Yeah, that's that, because I cannot lift heavy, because I'm not trained to lift heavy, you know. And but basically all my body is from the training, from the fighting, from the condition, 4 years, tortures and all those kind of things. That's pretty much that's it. Yeah.
Wow. Speaking of bodybuilders, our first guest here was a bodybuilder from Cambodia. To me, one of the best to ever come out of Asia, as I can, you know, good friend of mine, Chris Dim. Yeah. And you know Chris as well, right?
Yes.
How did you get to know Chris and his son? He said, I believe you trained his son a little bit. So yeah, tell us about your relationship with Chris Dim and Josh.
Yeah, Dim. When I met Chris during the events in Stockton, and then that's how we met. And then he said, you know, hey, Kenya, that is our, my, you know, bodybuilder famous, because, you know, I have no clue. I'm not an internet person or media person. So that's what I have a chance to meet him.
And what year? What year did you meet him?
Long time. When he's still, you know, he's still competing. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Like the 1990s, somewhere around there.
Yeah, it's a long time. Yeah.
Yes.
So we kind of, you know, on and off talk on the phone and things like that and stuff like that. And after his incident that he had, so I still support him, thing like that. So he brought his son to train with me in the city in San Francisco.
Okay.
Nice.
Stockton, John, you're from Stockton, right?
No, Sacramento, which is Sacramento. Stockton's maybe with 45 minutes max, something like this.
I'm sorry. Mistake. I met him in Stockton, but he lives in Sacramento. Sorry.
Yeah, he lives. Chris is from Sacramento too. Correct. Sacramento area. But it's not far. Not far at all. Chris was very supportive when we launched the podcast, first one to volunteer to come on. So if you guys haven't listened to episode one with Chris Dim, go back and listen to that. Another great story for sure.
Great episode, yes.
Yeah. Well, Kenya, we're really excited to get the book. Where can folks find it?
You know, it's on all kind of platform, Amazon, Google, Google Book, or Barnes & Noble, and all, everything in there. Yeah. Just type Blackstone Hand or okay. Kenya. Yes. Thai Kenya Pride, and they come out the whole thing there. I think the book production comes kind of sold out right now. They sold it.
Oh, is it? Okay, I got mine just in time because I ordered it, like I said, and
Have to produce it more. First, they don't know me, so after they just put some sort of a little bit, and then all of a sudden, like people go there and boom, boom, and then that's it. It's so loud now.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's but there'll be more coming. And if anybody does go on and try to buy it, it shows temporarily sold out. There will be more. Just check back. What we'll do is we'll put a link to where you could buy it in the show notes. This way everybody can find it. We also made a post on our Facebook page for those that follow the Lao American Sports Hall of Fame. Showing the cover of the book and a link to where you could buy it on Amazon. But like Kenya said, it's available Barnes & Noble, Google Books, probably, that you could read it electronically on Kindle if you don't like the old-fashioned book. Whatever you choose. But I'm excited to hear it. I encourage everybody to go out and get it. It's one of those stories that need to be told, Kenya. You could read about this stuff in a history book, but until you get a firsthand account, right? You don't really understand it. And then, you know, you're using your athletic platform and so forth to hopefully fight and prevent another situation like you went through when you were a teenager from happening again, bring about awareness to it. We really think that's admirable, what you're doing there. So,
yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, hey, folks, Co, anything else for Kenya before we break?
No, thank you, Kenya, for coming on. It's been a great episode. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Until next time, again, if you haven't already, please like, share, and comment on the C4 podcast. All right, everybody, Have a great night.
That's a wrap. Thanks.
Thank you, John. Thank you.
The C4 Podcast is brought to you by the Lao American Sports Hall of Fame. Visit us on the web at laoamericansports.com, celebrating the first, inspiring the next.